What? Hold on.
Hello.
Rattle speaking.
Sorry, I just want to know. We managed to pull off the Tesla coil thing over there. They're going to be doing performances all night of that. We even got a bar over there too. I mean, we got all the free booze in here, but for the Tesla coil room, I even managed to get a bar.
Yeah.
Velvet ropes and a bar. So.
Where's the free alcohol?
What are we waiting?
It's over there somewhere. You know.
All right. So we're competing against Tesla coils. Thanks, Rattle.
Yep.
Well, the way this is going to go is essentially we have that room the whole night. At some point, I think Scott is going to want to shut down this one so you don't have to have Scott here all night. Or
no, it's okay. You can
let it go. We own this whole section of the building.
Yes. So don't burn it down.
So for Saturday night here, we own this whole section of the building. We got singing Tesla coils over there. If stuff goes off with the if it doesn't rain in Arizona, they're going to be controlling the big freaking gigantic space telescope at the Peak Peak Observatory. Kick. Yeah, Kitt's Peak, right over there. They're going to be controlling that. I think there's Mythos Gaming going on in that room. So, welcome to the reality wing of Dragon Con.
Yeah. And you can hear the Tesla sing.
So I guess we're just waiting. Are we waiting for?
We're not waiting.
No. He said it's okay to start. So
okay, do we have the beer back here for the?
No.
The beer's back there.
Over there.
So it's we like the approve
water.
Them.
There's lots of water
I'll
up here.
I'll just give you one warning. There is one question, and it gets asked every year, and usually very early in on things. And you know it's a bad question when you ask it, and you get a really shaken up, like, malt beverage, cheap beer when you ask this question.
And so the cattle prod.
It's almost always the first one, too. Because you know the basic rules are, you ask a question, you get a beer. And we pretty much just go until everybody's asking questions like, I was using my computer once, and this fucked up thing happened to me.
Let's kick it up a notch initially, first time around, and do a little more audience participation, and have our audience either boo or cheer the question.
Oh, I like that.
First.
Some PA is always good.
Sure.
And I'm going to be running back and forth between here and there. Yeah.
Which means you won't be talking all the time.
So if your question gets well cheered, that gets a beer.
It's my first drink.
If, however, we can answer it, you lose the beer.
Oh.
How's that bad? Double jeopardy.
No. We can usually answer the question. No.
Okay, let's hold it off.
That makes the beer last longer.
You don't know how this works.
Hey, I want more beer.
There is enough beer in this room that you can get a second beer to the person who answers it.
No.
I'm sure we can do that. No, we're going to be pretty lax on the rules here.
Yeah.
It's
breezy.
Yeah. Usually.
For Scott's sake, anybody out in here under 21, leave now, please. If you stay here, we will assume you're over 21.
And that's not 21 hex. It's not 21 octal.
It states you are over 21.
It's 21 decimal.
Well, we've got to get this on the road. Let's stop discussing rules and let's start
asking questions.
First question.
I guess we should go down the line and do the introductions. How many people weren't here for Hacking 101?
Hey, Scott.
We should probably do the introductions.
Hey, Scott, before you leave, whatever the total was last night, add about a dozen because we had an impromptu mini Hacking 101 outside because it was too full in here. So we had about a dozen people total outside.
Took Hacking 12.
Well, let's go down the line. We'll start with Randall and we'll do a quick introduction so you know who we all are as opposed to just a bunch of asshats sitting in front of a table.
Well, I don't know if I can disqualify that.
It's like a drunk night.
Yeah. Hi, guys. I'm Randall. Randall Schwartz. If you have seen Pearl on the net, I probably had something to do with telling people how to use that. I also, my other claim to fame, which got me coming to Dragon Con, was that I pissed off Intel well enough a few years back to get a felony conviction, which, as of February of this year, has been expunged. I am now free. Yay! And so I can once again travel to Canada, and I might actually be able to get into Australia without too many problems now. And I can actually legally say, no, I've never been convicted of a crime if somebody asks. So yes, it's a good plan, definitely a good plan. Took many years. What?
What crime did you commit?
Oh boy, that's an hour and a half talk.
No crime. Yeah. No crime.
He's done that panel before, Thomas.
I've done that like
it.
Three times.
Somebody can ask him that question later.
Yes. Yeah. I can give you a short version, but let me get through the introductions here first. Yeah.
Okay, I'm James. Yes, my last name really is Dean. Okay, and my day job, I build really big commercial computer systems. So if anybody's hoping to get out of this with a size question, good luck.
All right, my name is Rattle. My name is Nick, and I'm an information warfare specialist. I work for a lot of different people and wear a lot of different hats. I'm the CEO of Industrial Medics, which is a hacker think tank, and we pass the CEO title back and forth between me and Decius based on who has the least conflict of interest at that given point in time. And these days, my major clients are a think tank in Washington, D.C., and a sub-department of the, a sub-agency of the Department of Homeland Security that will remain nameless for the purposes of this talk. I've done everything from domestic telecom, overseas telecom, ran several ISPs, worked for a company that got bought by Microsoft, wasn't assimilated, and yeah.
And are you aware you're touching the business end of the cattle prod?
I think he likes it.
It's the end that tickles.
It's the end that most resembles the Tesla coil.
My name is Ilanka Dunnan, and my day job is that I make computer games, massively multiplayer online games. I'm here on the panel because I crack codes. I've cracked some famous unsolved ones. I maintain a list of the world's most famous unsolved codes. I have a book out.
With many copies in the
front. She has groupies.
We're just getting kicked
intro.
Off. Get your ass back
You're
here,
You're like a
bitch.
Half hour late, Drew. Get in here.
This is the intros.
I don't... No excuses. Get your butt
get
up here.
Get your ass back here. Because I got...
And he leaves the room.
Okay, Fuller, make it brief.
Okay. Brief. Howdy, I'm Fuller. I break into banks. Actually, that's half of it. I break in. The other half is to keep other people out and make sure your information never actually leaves those banks.
All right, you're done. I'm Pope Johnny X. I think you all know me.
Ask a question. All right, first question.
Short and sweet.
But not in the biblical sense.
And that guy really wants
Wait for the mic.
What other lesser-known methods besides SQL injection do you know about?
Oh, wait. Before we toss out the bill, we have to do the disclaimer that absolves us of all responsibility.
Already done that.
Everyone here is 21? Okay. Go.
That's a good question.
No, they haven't voted on it. Okay, audience, good question, yay or nay? Good question, cheer now.
Yeah, come on.
Bad question, foo now.
All right, let me address that one real directly. Okay, SQL injection, he's talking about, is basically when you find a web page that is taking input, not validating it properly, and it's a query against a database. And you can just inject SQL code, and it's remarkably simple. There's all kinds of apps out there to even help you do it. Absinthe is a real popular one for OS X.
10.
Yeah, but anyway, SQL injection is a major problem. And I actually got a real funny story about this. I was this is a good okay.
That's it.
Rattle, they want the beer and they got fucking killed.
Well, give him the fucking beer. Give the guy a beer. That's why you got your background process. You know what that is?
Oh, it's for them to ask questions. We can't do long stories.
I went SH beer ampersand enter, you know. Bam! The beer, the man. The
next question. Man.
Short answers.
You blue.
Okay, but anyway, short answers. Other ways. Cross-site scripting is a lot more dangerous than people think it is. Billy Hoffman at Spy Dynamics has done some. Who's also an industrial memetics member.
Next.
You've been outvoted.
My question is.
People cheer for the cattle prod.
My question is, can I have a beer?
Yeah,
and that's just
but that only works once. That can't be asked again.
That's the question I was talking about earlier. Give him one that's shaken up really good.
No!
Give him the skunky beer.
Give him a good beer. That was a good question.
You ready?
All right, that guy in the back there.
Whoever has the mic, ask the fucking question.
Okay, which is currently the softer, more absorbent, and above all, cheaper toilet paper? Charmin or SCO stock certificate?
Give that man... give that man a 40 answer of the cheapest shit we have.
Hang on. I usually get the no-name brand that's cheapest on sale because they're all pretty much the same when you're soaking them with gasoline and setting them on fire.
Cool.
But all right, I saw them first.
Is the Intel Core 2 problems as bad as, or is it just a non-issue?
It's problems. There are problems.
What?
RTDO, it's got holes. RTDO sucks.
No. Enjoy your skunky beer.
Just give him a beer.
Well, all right.
If we don't understand the
define
question,
core two and define problems.
Yeah, do you mean
there's
core
some micro, there's microcode problems. And
yeah, there's micro break in. The core two duo, I guess.
I trust Theo Durrat's explanation of it, and I think it's pretty solid. Theo's the right amount of paranoid for me.
It's going to be a problem.
Plus the fact, when has Intel released a new core with new microcode and not had problems with it?
Remember the foo bug? Where if you threw literally, we were talking about 16 bits at good old Pentium 5, so they would just lock cold, and everybody
just
had to write things into the kernel.
He'll just keep doing that all night. So
I'd just like to say, as a follow-up to the SQL injection question, one of my coworkers, I recently found a shell injection, which is in a lot of ways much worse. But also, I was wondering, an unrelated question, why is the internet so slow when I'm playing my jams?
Vista.
Do you have Windows Vista?
The internet is not.
I know what he's going to call, and that's good.
That was a setup.
Quick thing about that: Windows Vista does have a known problem. Microsoft has actually admitted to it.
So, slowdown.
Yeah, it's they want to keep up your music and enjoyability performance versus network performance, so it slows down to like 10,000 packets a second, which actually is very, very, very slow from what like a 10 meg network can do, much less 100 meg Wi-Fi.
Of course, it is a desktop OS.
Well, yeah.
Which means it's kind of like
a toy. Wait a second. What
like
about like
wristwatch?
The business?
Oh, wait,
ultimate...
I don't wear a wristwatch.
Well, my parents said I wasn't supposed to talk to strangers.
All right, we'll keep the mic going around. That's yeah, and to give him a beer. We pretty much got to work the room at this point and start giving out a lot of beers.
The
we
questions...
have a lot of beer to get rid of.
Ask your question.
Go for it.
So we're looking for political solutions to the network neutrality problem, but what about technical solutions, such as building a separate physical infrastructure using something like ad hoc wireless? How far are we
from being
able to
do that? You got a few hundred billion you're not doing anything else with?
Well, I mean, I'm not talking about something that's going to compete with the bandwidth that the public internet has.
We got
but
that.
Just something
got,
to exchange
we got internet
information
too,
with.
We got MilNet, we got CipperNet, we got NipperNet. All those are separate nets. They are all government.
We still have SneakerNet.
Except for, well, internet too. And then for that matter, you have to look at the perspective from the, is the all the major internet service providers are their own backbone networks. They are interconnected, but in many different ways, we do have separate networks. So if you have like private side needs for like your company, you can just go all layer.
I'm being told to speak over you. What is the first programming language that you all started using when you got into computers and everything?
Basic.
Yes.
Basic,
there's a reason it's called Basic.
Basic.
No, seriously, a Basic on a Commodore 64.
No,
I'm playing with Python now.
In my case, I had an IBM PC Junior, and there was actually a cartridge that contained BASIC, and it really sucked because it had BASIC in the ROM, but you couldn't write the disk. So if you forgot to boot off the goddamn cartridge, you'd like write up this program, and I mean, you know, 10, 20, whatever, and you wouldn't be able to save it, and man, it sucked. So,
okay, I claim bragging rights on this one. Assembly code on punch cards on a Burroughs A15 series mainframe,
which I managed to
crash 2 days before it was supposed to be retired.
My hair isn't gray enough for that.
My dad was in computers from early days, so I learned on an IBM 360. And then he had an HP 3000, so I was coding an SPL on an HP 3000 before I was in junior high school.
I could say something so.
My first program I wrote when I was 7, and it was in a language called Focal, which I only got to play on paper, but it was for the PDP-8. Mm. Back a ways.
And it's my favorite language simply from the puns you can make on the name of the language.
Yes, Focal.
Right. I used to use TorrentSpy to download some of my software and music. Now that I can't use it anymore, what do you recommend I use?
Money!
You want the legal answer or do you want our answer? You know,
actually, I use Usenet.
Frankly, Wares has really gone back to the old days, and that used to be totally BBS driven. In fact, it's funny in that a lot of the Wares courier scene, and they're still out there. They still operate the same way they did back in the BBS days. A lot of them still break shit up on
Usenet
floppy disk drive.
All right, I'm being told to ask, how is it possible that a Japanese can create a language that doesn't involve Unicode?
Ah, Ruby. Yeah. Ruby.
Possibly because they speak English better than we do.
Here, give this man a beer.
You've never really spent a lot of time living in Asia, have you?
Okay, quick question.
It's called English.
Next.
Have you ever seen a successful BGP teardown attack in the wild?
Wait, what?
Have you ever seen a BGP teardown attack successful in the wild? When they've been a TCP session without MD5 sums? And you're actually causing AS to drop its route and reconstitute and then flap and die.
I think that's got more to do with people getting bored with
TCP.
Right,
well, they could do it back in the day, but right, I have
but
not.
Have you ever seen a successful attack?
No. Okay. No. I've never seen a successful.
Okay, next.
It's supposed to go to the man. I think the man in green.
Student green.
Wait, the microphone.
I can't hear you if you're not talking in the mic.
Questions over here.
There, go.
There's a... obviously a lot of Slack RPGs. My question is, what is your preferred OS for RPGs, and is there a place where lay people could go to...
Lay people?
No. I'm a lay person.
Rocks propel grenades.
Exactly.
Pen and paper.
I mean, it really comes down to what's available in the operating environment.
Random programming.
The rest of the question is, is there a site or somewhere you would recommend to, like if we're using XP Pro, to narrow down all the running programs and what we can actually do, use, shut down, I don't know, to...
Google Black Viper and services, and you'll probably find the good answer to that question.
Although the RPG platform, that sounds like an alarming question.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to play with game development and you've never done it before, I would go and I would download one of the free MUD programs and just practice with some sort of a text game. If you want to start cutting your teeth with graphical environment, Neverwinter Nights, you can go in and make your own module. Most of the modules in Neverwinter Nights are crap, so as soon as you do a good one, you're going to be kind of up at the top 2% there.
And if you want to discover a massively multiplayer online game backend that actually scales as opposed to every other one out there, go have a look at Project Darkstar running under Solaris.
Who the hell has my Baileys?
It's over here. It's on the floor.
What? Quick question so that the other people can drink too. Just on the panel, yes or no, simple vote. Is the VMs on VT actually going to create a significant or a economically significant impact on hosting services?
Could be.
VMs? Yeah, I think it's going to be...
Yes or no? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yes or no?
Sure.
You've blown his fuse.
All right.
Okay, short, sweet, simple. Is Ajax evil?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. I prefer Comet for cleaning myself.
Yeah. I like to use evil. It's one of my favorite tools. But yes, Ajax is evil. Well, okay. Interface design. A lot of people who go to
never
moving.
Never ask why.
No. This is shut the fuck up. A lot of people who move from like doing designing like desktop applications. So a lot of people who go from designing like desktop applications to web applications aren't used to the thought process necessary to really validate the interactions
well, aren't used
between
to thought,
the client
period.
And the server that is really necessary. And Ajax makes it both easier go. To design a lot of stuff no, and next, easier go. To...
I had one question.
Bad well, fucking hole.
There are port scanners in JavaScript too.
I have a VoIP system at home, and I wanted to try to figure out how to basically record my phone conversations to the point where if I talk to a creditor or something, I can have proof that they promise something to me.
Skype.
Is there some sort of program that will like record all VoIP conversations or whatnot?
Google VoIP, Google Record. Take your pick. Seriously.
Asterisk if you really want to have fun.
If you really want to go crazy, you build an asterisk system. What state do you live in?
You too could be a phone company.
There's one party consent issues with recording phone calls where technically if you're, depending on your state's law, if you actually use something like that in court, like they could either make it inadmissible or say you broke the law by recording it. But I'm pretty sure that Georgia is one party consent.
Yeah, it is.
Yep.
The fun thing about asterisk systems is that you can set up your own voicemail hell for people you don't want calling you.
Yep. Good for you. Next.
Basically, odd question back to one of the root of all evils, i.e. Microshap. How long are they actually going to be supporting XP? Because Vista scares the piss out of me.
As long as there are large enough corporations waving enough money at them who don't want to move to Vista.
Makes sense.
Actually, it's him.
Yeah. Considering the number of copies of Windows 2000 that are still running out there, it's going to be a while. That too.
Why can't I do arithmetic on a void pointer?
You need to upgrade to void level 2.
You need to be a lot drunker. Obviously, her way too sober.
Void 2.0.
Because there's a difference between zero and nothing. But only if you're a compiler programmer, okay?
Okay, this one's for Drew. What's with the cattle prod? Where can I get one?
Got your beard. Well, you're gonna have a hard time getting one like this. This is an antique. This is a classic 30-year-old cattle prod. The new ones are on these wimpy, flexible stalks. And the reason I like this is when the batteries run down and you can't shock anyone anymore, you can still beat the hell out of them like it's an aluminum baseball bat. The reason I have it is because when I was a kid, we used to live an hour's drive south of Atlanta on a farm, and we raised beef cattle. For a 9-year-old kid to get out of helping mom and dad like give the cows and the bull their injections and all this stuff is to get really pissed off and zap the 2,000-pound bull in the testicles, and after it goes through several fences. And really, most cattle farmers, they rent their bulls. I thought that's kind of weird too. But after the bull, no.
Where did you get that cattle prod?
Huh?
Where did you get that cattle prod?
Family heirloom, yeah.
Seriously, if you want to get one like that, that's an antique, go to your nearest rural flea market. You might be able to find one there.
But yeah, basically, the way for a nine-year-old kid to get out of doing the cow stuff and watch cartoons is to destroy the reproductive capabilities of the rental bull.
You can't buy them on eBay, can you?
These?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think eBay has rules against selling cattle prods like that.
Okay. So my question is fairly simple. Ubuntu, great Linux distro or the greatest Linux distro?
I think if you're a new Linux user, it's probably the best one right now.
Best desktop, yeah.
And it's a pretty damn good system. Some people really, really
it's not
hate
as good
Ubuntu,
as OS 10, but,
yeah,
but okay.
I like it.
Real men run Solaris on
10.
Their laptops.
Yeah. BSD.
Slack.
Same thing. That's a kernel level.
Wait, Mike.
No, I prefer the GNOLD operating system.
On a weekly standpoint, how many ID10T errors do you actually see a weekly?
I mean, what?
ID how many people 10T? Are in the room again? Awesome. How many is that a week?
What about picnic errors?
I didn't hear.
PepCac is my favorite.
When you're working on like remote desktop sessions to multiple Windows servers, one's primary, one's your secondary, remember which one you're on before you hit reboot. Bad things can happen really quickly. Luckily, downtime is only 30 seconds.
Can I tell a favorite ID1T story?
Sure.
Large automobile manufacturer with a plant not a million miles from here, but not the one you're thinking of. Large manufacturing system running SAP, logging all the data for, manufacturing process. Basically, the entire factory hangs off it. 3,000 odd people working at the plant, so forth. Two sets of data on very expensive, large-scale storage devices. And they take one of the copies down so that they can do maintenance. And the database administrator then promptly copies the bad data over the good data. Factory is down for 3 weeks.
You still have a job.
I decline to answer that question.
This is a serious question.
Oh. Let's put on our serious thinking caps.
This is serious. Do you think the RIA just needs to get laid?
Yes!
Yes, preferably out the ass of the biggest fucking chicken you can find.
Either laid or a couple of shotgun blasts to their collective faces.
I thought they were seeing the MPAA. I didn't know why they needed
to... Hey, yeah, bring them on. I got fresh batteries.
I was spending a lot of time talking to people down in Music Row in Nashville about this stuff, and at least like a lot of folks there are of the opinion that the RIA is fucking up and that suing the end consumer is not
all,
the right
all
solution.
I was wondering is if y'all are going to announce to the group the total from last night. Because when I heard that, I was kind of happy about it. So.
$353. We went about $20 over. We owe that gentleman right there, I believe, an extra $10. And I think I've got the receipt with me. Hang on.
Whoa. That includes a subgenius donation.
Could you pass it on to the man in green?
That's a record, isn't it?
Nice.
Yeah, that's a big record. It is a big record.
Record crowd.
Okay,
record
this question is mostly for Alonka. Although, if you have an opinion on it, the rest of you can answer. What video game are you most technically impressed by? As in,
Grand Theft Auto.
How did they do that?
I don't know about technically. Graphically and technically, the game Okami on PlayStation 2 was just an amazing, amazing game. It didn't win some of the awards as some of the more popular kind of mainstream games, but Okami was an exceptional game. I mean, Japanese calligraphy artwork, and it also tied in things with the controller, and it had beautiful game design. I played it through like 10 times. I have a speed run of something like 14 hours and 8 minutes on it.
Anything that runs on a holodeck, I still want to know how that shit works.
I only play Grand Theft Auto.
I don't play video games. I have nothing against video games or people who play them. I never really got into them. $379.94. What, huh? Dude, I was a sysadmin for the largest porn site web hosting facility in North America. I had root on all the systems that ran Larry Flint stuff. I got bored with porn after 3 weeks and started playing around with Cisco routers. Once you reach porn saturation point, and once you see,
No,
you have not seen some of the fetish sites I had to maintain. Oh my fucking God! I'm still in therapy.
Like what? Examples.
Anything you can think of and 10 times worse.
Okay.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay. So this question is mostly...
Do not give me porn URLs because I won't look. Okay, go.
Next.
I'm asking you a question, damn it.
Okay.
Go.
We're listening.
Yes.
She's wearing blue velour.
And actually, this is mostly for Johnny X. Oh, have you been a victim of social engineering this year?
Oh, boy.
When did they con you into doing this track again?
I guess conning me into... No, it's not really conning me into do it because I thought I was conning the con by getting them to...
Precisely.
Pay for my...
Wait, in the past year, have you had an ex-girlfriend drop another cat on you?
No, I haven't.
I seem to collect cats from ex-girlfriends. They all go crazy, they skip town, and they leave their cats with me.
Why do they go crazy?
Some of them with acid addictions.
He's attracted to mentally unstable.
The cats, I don't know about the girlfriends.
I have never given my cats acid. That
no,
would
you
be
haven't,
mean.
But the girlfriends did.
We've given your cats acid, not.
I'll kill you.
Huh? What?
Go for it.
Okay. I must be doing shit. Something wrong.
Hey, other
I
than Ethereal and it's Super, is there any software available for Vista?
Wait, hold on.
That sounds like some of the Japanese
don't,
noise
don't
bands
aim
I used
it toward
to play.
The speaker, the big speaker.
Well, Ethereal and Super, is there anything capable for the new Vista that is port scan?
Wait. I couldn't make that out. What was the question?
Just software capability for Vista. Like, you know, you have Ethereal that you can use for XP Pro and all the other different flavors. Anything
I don't know.
New
I haven't touched Vista myself, so...
I have no intention well, of touching Vista.
I haven't touched a Microsoft OS since 2001.
Actually, pretty much anything that uses WinSock 2 will run under Vista for its port scanning. There's a couple I've tried that seem
actually,
to have no
I take that back. I have to shout at a few Exchange servers every so often.
He's got pictures.
Right.
All right. The question is directed
depends
at Rattle, but it's
Wyatt.
Open forum. With the proliferation of Ajax and whatnot, you're seeing a lot of cross-domain applications being built for the web.
Yeah,
how
mashup.
Does that make your job as far as trying
interesting.
To...
Interesting. I like all that stuff.
Secure.
It's great. No, I think it's really great. I think... Ajax is really opening up a bunch of security issues involving JavaScript in the browser that have become issues now because all the browsers equally well, cool. mostly equally well, support a very strong JavaScript set of shit that they can do. So there's a lot of stuff that would have been an issue, you know, 5-6 years ago, but is just becoming an issue now. I actually really suggest following the work of like Billy Hoffman at Spy Dynamics. He has a book coming out soon. On Ajax security, it should be out in November. I expect it to be fucking amazing. Yeah, Billy's the best Web 2.0 security guy that I know.
I haven't used to write a book on Wikiscanner.
Hey, Virgil's working on a bunch
Rattle. There's something else. I think it's I just remembered it. GNUcitizen.org has been posting lots on BugTrack about making port scanners. Via JavaScript.
Yeah, Billy did that. Billy was the one who did that.
Is he?
Yeah, he was the one who dropped that. There were two people who dropped it almost simultaneously. Billy and one other guy.
Does he run GNU Citizen or not?
No.
Okay.
No.
Technique was really simple.
So anyway, my question's for Alanka. So those books that you have up there, are they for sale?
$20 and the autograph is free.
And if you ask her nicely,
or the book's
she'll give
free
you
and the autograph costs
$20. And you can have a beer for that question. How's that?
The book is very, very much worth it. It's a very cool book.
What's the book?
The Mammoth Book of Secret Codes and Cryptograms. It's also got a treasure hunt in. I got puzzles hidden in the puzzles, and it's doing quite well. It's already in its third printing.
Dude, wow. What did you do to your arm, and what's that
it's
metal thing there?
It's a shithouse.
That's kind of cool
classic.
Looking.
Ooh.
I mean, is that like drilled into your bones?
No.
Boo.
Who said that? Take away their beer.
How did it go into the race?
Happen?
What
did
you do?
Give this man two beers.
Yeah, he's had
or
a rough
something
time.
Stronger.
He fell off a chair.
Oh, he fell off a chair. Three beers because he might do something entertaining tonight, like fall off again. It's all right, dude. We got plenty of EMTs around here.
All right. I have a question for Ilanka. Kind of on the subject of the book, actually.
You might want to hold on a second for the question for Ilanka.
Okay. Oh,
yeah,
she's
signing. Autographing.
I'm sorry.
While she's...
No, go ahead. Can we go ahead?
Question.
Hi.
Yeah, did you ever... I forgot that statue that you were working on, the cryptography one. Did anybody ever figure out the third part of that?
Kryptos, the sculpture at the center of CIA headquarters. There's four codes on it. Three of the four have been solved by both someone in the public sector, also someone at CIA, and someone at NSA. However, the fourth part has not been solved yet, neither inside the government agencies nor outside. I'm sure that no one in the government has solved it because if someone had, someone would have gotten to me at this point. There are people in the government agencies that are actively pissed off that part four has not been solved yet. So, nope, famous unsolved code, still.
All right, this is for everyone. Very simply, all those people running SETI at home on their distributed network, one fine day, ding, you've got mail. And all of a sudden, the world is pelted by alien porn and real estate scams. 72 hours later, civilization collapses. What is your backup plan?
I am really upset that I missed key points of that.
Wait, repeat the question. You got to repeat that. Yeah, that sounded interesting.
Yeah.
All those people who are running SETI at home on the distributed network, one fine day, ding, you've got mail. All of a sudden, alien porn and real estate scams come through and flood the internet. 72 hours, civilization as we know it collapses. What do you do?
Lock myself in a bank vault with a whole bunch of books and a lot of food.
Okay, wait. What was the root cause of the collapse of civilization in 72 hours? That wasn't directly related to the spam or
alien
like
porn,
what?
I think.
No, the alien porn
alien
did it.
Porn and spam. Pretty much
well, give the man back the microphone alien because porn, I mean, threat modeling is one of the things that I do. So
porn doesn't. Yeah. No, porn doesn't shock me anymore, so it wouldn't warp my brain.
Take this seriously, I will, and I'll scare the shit out of everybody.
That was the idea of it. Distributed networks cause spam and porn to be distributed.
Basically, we get a message from outer space,
yeah,
and it turns out it's alien spam.
Oh, alien spam.
Well, that definitively proves there's no intelligent life in the universe.
Oh. Yeah, then
what,
I guess we're
fucked. Just curious, what would its vector onto the network be?
Oh. I've got a question for you. The
okay, just give the guy a beer. We'll keep moving on.
move along.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, I claim bragging rights on SETI at home. I borrowed a supercomputer for a weekend, long weekend.
Guy in the bunny suit, pardon me for interrupting, just you get a beer for the sheer balls involved wearing that suit in public.
Okay. Computer security is constantly changing. There's threats coming out, vulnerabilities left and right. How do you keep up with all these bugs that come out on a day-to-day basis?
Bug track.
Yeah. I rarely read bug track, honestly. It really you have to first look at what you have running on your network. And you need to either make a decision whether you're going to have a 24-hour staff of complete ass kickers or like the amount of vendor support you're going to get. And you got to figure out those middle zones of where you're going to go. Now, in the case of like vulnerabilities and things like that, perimeter security is very important. Figuring out how you actually run the perimeter of your network, what hardware it's run on, what type of IPS you're doing on that border, who's supporting it. Like, it's not easy. The first thing you always need to do is figure out what your organization's threat model is so that you have something you can base your decisions on. Because a lot of people will get caught up in this trap where they're like, oh, well, this isn't secure because there's like A, B, and C way to get through it. And your network's always going to be like that. So you always start by figuring out what is my organizational threat model? What is the stuff that I got to worry about the most? And when you do that, you usually find that the shit that you're worried about the most, that you actually have a way to prevent, is shit that happens inside your network, not attacks that come from outside your network, if that makes sense. That's a complex answer, but like...
So, what's your favorite hacking story?
Or you could threaten all the
personal
XP users
story.
With cattle prodding if they catch anything.
Question. Ask.
Sounds like you all have done everything. What's your favorite story?
We can stop.
Short story.
No long stories until
short
the beer's
story.
Gone.
Does anyone have a short story?
Sexually?
There you go.
You don't get a beer for that one. All right, you done?
We break at midnight, we order a few dozen pizzas, and then we can do the long stories while we're waiting for them to arrive. Sound good?
Yeah.
All right.
Quick
good
one.
Question. Go ahead and beer that, man.
The first question we had was about SQL injection, and you all mentioned Absinthe for OS X, which is cool because I've never heard of it, and I'm looking for something like that. What about cross-site scripting? Does it do that too? What kind of tools? For someone who's trying to keep people out of their application and who thinks he's done enough input validation but wants to be sure.
There's a few commercial scanners available for that. There's a few commercial scanners about that. And like, you know, I in that context, I kept dropping Spy Dynamics. It's because of all the people I know, that's where a lot of the serious shit's going down. And they have a scanner for that stuff. I don't know of any like open source stuff that's around for doing like SQL or rather cross-site scripting vulnerability detection.
Or you could be running hardware in an operating system that hardware traps buffer overflows and reboots the database. Database administrators should live in fear.
Yeah, plus if you can SQL inject, one of the guys said he found shell injection, which is like this, more dangerous.
This
if
is
you
just
can
a,
SQL inject, I guarantee
this
you
is
can
just
get a shell out of the
little
database.
Question about my my new ISP that I got. And I noticed that I got it, and then a paper came, and I signed this paper, and it has can't use distributed networks, can't run your own listserv, you can't run a little server or any, and we might want to do some of these things. And how soon is it that they're going to say, hey, you're using too much bandwidth, or do they really...
It really varies in terms of the way the abuse departments handle it, and it's all fucked up. One of the things I'd recommend right now is Amazon has a service called EC2 that allows you to just basically break off a VM in their cloud. $72 a month for like your own server, and like the bandwidth rates and stuff like that are fucking great. So
what is it?
EC2. It's Amazon's EC2. Web services for breaking out VMs. It's really good.
Okay.
Running shit out of your house often sucks because of the upstream anyway.
Yeah.
And the TOS agreements and acceptable use policies that a lot of the ISPs have suck and they fuck you over. You have to go to business class shit in order to do just about anything.
Thank you.
It's bullshit. I hate it. I really do. The other thing is you can run your services over Tor as hidden services. That's a neat thing that you can do.
And take a 50% hit on performance.
And that's evil,
yeah,
too.
But
it's an abuse of Tor.
What do you guys prefer to use, Mac, Linux, or Windows?
BSD.
It depends on
Solaris, again.
I like Solaris.
The guy who was sitting next to the cute blonde, you're a boyfriend, right?
No.
Oh, well, okay, cool, okay. Well, you need to talk to me then.
Yeah. She likes you.
Give right. her lots of beer. She's
two,
going
two
to
things.
Need it.
First one for
Give
Johnny.
Give the rest of the beer.
Okay. I worked as the IT director for a adult dating internet site, which will remain nameless, so I've seen
Come
it all
on,
also.
Say it.
I've actually seen worse because it's user-uploaded content.
Dude, we also hosted amateur sites.
No, it's worth seeing like 70, 80-year-old people trying
you
to get laid online.
Book of horror.
Okay, we hosted also like sites for people who are into people in their 70s and 80s.
Dude, this is
very little shocks me anymore. What was your question? Go ahead.
All right, the question was, back to my original question, I wanted to know what other lesser-known methods there were besides SQL injection.
Oh, I know my way around a Linux or BSD command prompt fairly well, but I am not a technical hacker by any means. I specialize in social engineering, so ask these guys.
For like specifically just web applications? Like just like web applications?
I haven't tried the peanut one.
I mean, you could be talking about, well, we'll just stick with web applications.
Well, I mean, cross-site scripting is big because then you can get the client to do something. If you're concerned with getting the server to do something, SQL injection is a great way. In some cases, there used to be problems with PHP where you could actually like SQL inject or like
used
well,
to be.
With, okay, if you can cross-site scripting inject stuff, in some cases you can get it interpreted as PHP code and then able to do stuff on the actual server. That's possible to do. But most of the time, the stuff that the real evil folks who are most likely to attack your systems with skill are concerned with is not your servers, but the clients connecting to them. Because like right now, building botnets is all the fucking rage with every asshole who thinks they're like an Uber hacker.
Especially not in the United States.
Oh yeah, because they can figure out ways to make money with them. Because spam is frankly big business. It sucks. So usually attackers are more concerned with getting the clients than they are your servers. Now, in the case where they get your servers, they're usually just interested in SQL injection because they're going after your credit card database.
Wait a second. Hey, is that a tone set on your hip, isn't it?
Butt set.
Okay.
Dude.
It's hot.
Go. Go. Ask your question.
All right.
Wow. What's that porn site you run again with contributed content?
I want to give that man a little bit of advice, too. Because one of the things that you always want to do is protect the bootay. Like, remember I talked about threat modeling. You figure out first what...
All right. We all have our little pet companies that we happen to cheer for. Google, Apple, Nintendo, what have you. At some point, all of this power is going to corrupt, absolutely. Exactly what is missing from this axis of evil, and are we anywhere near that happening?
What, who, huh?
I
don't quite understand.
Okay, fuck the man, eat the rich!
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's because you've been drinking or me or both of us, but try it.
No, eat the poor. The rich are too fatty.
I know that people here have their pet companies, Google, Apple, Nintendo, what have you.
Google was corrupt as soon as they went public. Believe me, I was there. They have wonderful PR. Sorry.
Okay, so at what point are they going to make it obvious?
Hasn't it been obvious?
They're very
when
smart.
When the marketing money runs out.
They're very smart, and they have a lot of smart people working for them and a lot of money. And I'll tell you something interesting about Google. I'll try to keep this under 30 seconds. No. When I worked at Google and they went public on day 91 or 92, the people who had been there the longest were able to start cashing out some of their options. The guy who used to be head of Google's hardware deployment and infrastructure globally, this was his first job out of Stanford. He was like 24, 25 at the time. We got a company-wide email that says, guys, I've eaten, slept, and shit Google every moment of my waking life for the last 3 years. I'm going to spend the next 6 months stoned and naked on various nude beaches in southern France. Don't call me. I will call you when I'm ready to come back for sabbatical. By the way, here's my replacement. His replacement was a guy in his 50s, ex-Marine, and then the next 20 years working for the NSA and the CIA. I have a feeling that arrangements were made and someone who worked for the company and the other three-letter agency that's more evil than the company now controls all of Google's hardware globally.
No.
It's been that way for several years now.
No.
Okay. I was there.
I use a McAfee virus scanner and firewall, and I've been looking to see inbound events, these computers that have, I don't know exactly what they're trying to do, but I trace the event. I don't know if you guys know, in the McAfee firewall, you can actually
I've never used it, but can I ask you, does it tell you, like, what protocols or ports inbound that you're seeing?
So? Yeah, it tells me the IP addresses that are, like, trying to get into my
computer.
Anything about,
like, ports or protocols in terms of what type of inbound connection it is?
Yeah, and when I went to trace the event, it actually showed, like, some of the computers were over in China, and then some were in Arlington, Washington, D.C.
Okay, that actually starts to sound like DNS traffic. In fact, it's kind of funny. One of the anybody who's worked at an ISP has this same story. The guy who called tech support, and it's just like, I got this stuff that tracks the connections in and out of my computer, and I keep seeing all these connections, this location that's like right outside Langley. It's right in the Washington, D.C. area. Every so often I'm seeing these packets coming to go to it, and I can't explain what the hell they fucking are, man. Is the CIA in my machine? No. One of the DNS root servers. The DNS root servers all tend to be in very, very, very secure locations with lots of fucking fiber running around. And coincidentally, hey, they're around major fucking governmental offices and shit. So, like, a lot of times you can draw really wrong conclusions about what some stuff is. But what I'd look at is, before you look at where the computer is, look at what the traffic is, what it is, what ports it's coming and going to, like, what its source and destination port are, and, like, that type of stuff actually will tell you more about what you're seeing than the location of the machines. With I have no idea. I haven't used that particular software. So, but that stuff's universal to the way networking works. So if it's reporting you anything that's useful, that information should be there somewhere.
With the proper hardware, how easy is it to freak a DSL connection from, say, an outside source? So the box across your street.
Huh?
A DSL connection uses a phone line.
Freaking phone hacking.
Oh no, they use dry pairs, dry copper pairs.
Okay.
Basically, wet copper pairs, basically a POTS line, your standard telephone connection. You dial it, you pick it up, you get a dial tone and whatever. It connects to a switch, and it may or may not have relays in the way. Wet copper pair. Dry copper pair used to be called alarm lines, which is basically just a pair of copper that goes between you and the CO and doesn't have anything in between it. And that's what DSL runs over. So essentially, you just have two wires connected up to a DSL terminator.
With the proper hardware, how easy is it to listen to that?
To listen to it?
Yeah.
Listening to it is not that hard.
A good digital scope will pretty much pick it up.
Yeah.
Interpreting it is, in real time is
from a wiretap
a little difficult.
From a wiretap perspective, they wouldn't actually do it at that level. They do it at the level of the router because all the routers these days have CALIA compliance. And if the the feds issue a warrant or something like that to the ISP, they just have a way to tap in.
Okay. On, like, question for you,
if you
everybody.
Stick anything on the line, you're the doing wiretapping.
Yeah.
VI or Emacs?
What?
VI or Emacs?
Emacs.com, the entire website was done in VI. Okay.
Emacs rules.
80.
Although, you got to give Emacs props for coming with its own psychotherapist built in.
No, I mean, seriously, there are a lot of really hardcore C coders that love Emacs, and they have reason to.
Emacs, you know, the editor with ambitions of being an operating system.
Yeah, it's not just an editor, it's an OS. That's Emacs.
Look, Emacs can emulate VI, not the other way around.
We used to make jokes about 8 megs and swapping.
80,
Jesus
80.
Christ, you load up iTunes, you're using like 35 megs or something like that now. You know, you can load up Firefox and be using 300 megs of memory when you got a bunch of tabs open.
Okay,
so
next.
It's not
next. Just
anymore.
Next.
Johnny, this question is next. For you. You said that you're into social engineering a lot. And I was wondering if you or anyone else that you know about has tried to use NLP or any other kind of applied psychology, neurolinguistics programming, or anything like that in social engineering.
I know what NLP stands for, and that's all I know about it.
I use NLP all the time.
You use NLP without even realizing it, actually.
Yeah, but Alarka, with you, it's a hobby. Okay?
Does that mean I'm an NLP savant or idiot savant or something?
Idiot.
I mean, well, yeah, I'll buy the idiot part. Oh, yeah, I freely admit that.
Are you okay with that?
Well, yeah, I'm a sub-genius, therefore, by default, I'm an idiot.
By the way,
praise Bob.
And then kill Bob.
In hacking,
so much of an idiot that I brought the minister shirt, and I specifically for the Church of the Sub-Genius panel last night, and I forgot to wear it.
Okay. By the way,
wow. In Hacking 101...
Along the lines of those people who have been persecuted, I need to point something out, that this year, 2007, is the 700-year anniversary of the persecution of all time. On Friday, October 13th, 1307, was when King Philip IV arrested a bunch of the Knights Templar. And when they didn't say what he wanted, he had them burned at the stake. Ooh. So, to the Knights Templar, I wanted to say, we salute you. Okay.
Cross! Score!
In Hacking 101,
you've been talking to Dan Brown way too freaking much.
And to the
in Hacking 101,
yes, but she's more entertaining.
Rattle said,
we got to get a lot more
louder.
More questions.
Rattle said that he did most of his work on a notebook computer. What do you look for when you select your notebook?
Frankly, I really don't want to do much tweaking to my gear to make it usable. I am very much the closer something is to solving as much of my needs as possible out of the fucking box is what I buy on. I spent years of my life sitting there hacking at my desktop back in like early Linux, like 1996, running Evolution DR fucking 12, just working on my goddamn desktop all day. I don't want to do that anymore. So these days, I'm actually, the other thing is hardware durability. In that these days I don't run on a big budget, so I don't carry a backup machine with me at all times. So hardware durability, if for some reason I need battery to get another life. Machine, how fast it, battery life isn't actually that usually important to me personally. But
let's
for
anybody,
let's
just
start
with Randall and work down.
For anybody on the panel, is there a standard method that you can use?
No, yes, shut up!
Yeah.
He asked only him, though. He asked only him.
Yeah.
No, he asked only him. It wasn't the panel.
Hmm?
He said,
no,
he's
no,
a rabbit.
He said
rabbit.
And the rest of us.
Oh, and the rest?
Yes.
Anybody on the panel, is there a standard method that you can use on any operating system to determine whether or not a malicious rootkit has been installed?
On any operating system?
Each one has its own.
Each one has its own.
Yes, is it doing something it's not supposed to?
Any tool like that will be designed around in the next generation of rootkits, so there's never going to be one answer for that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, suppose you're sitting down with your aunt's computer and you want to find out. I mean, she's been running with no virus scanner or anything for like 3 years, and there's certain basic things that you're going to run. You're going to run a virus scanner. You're going to run SpyBot SCD. You're going to run different.
Okay.
If you're in
one of those situations,
build systems architectures that have to basically endure anything that can be thrown at them, even things you can't think of right now, and things that haven't been invented yet.
So you get
to a point where basically you use heuristics, which is a fancy word for you have systems that watch the systems and verify that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. If they deviate from that profile for any reason, you flag that as an alarm. That's completely OS independent. Yes. It's like profiling.
Yeah, a lot of times, always remember when you're working on a computer problem, and this is very easy to forget when you hit complex problems, it's all about point A to point B. The state you want to be and the state you are and the shortest amount of time it takes to get between those points. And usually when you're looking at a situation like that, it's actually to just copy off the application data you're concerned with, whack the fucking machine, reinstall the goddamn thing, put the data back on, because you will spend 4 hours doing that on a modern machine. 4 hours. If you're looking at like a machine infested with a bunch of adware and malware, you might spend 12 hours actually getting all that shit off. So don't waste your fucking time, because at least when you're doing an OS install, you can go off and do other things. You just got to come back and hit next a few times.
All right, thank you. And with virtual machines, this is starting to become automated as well. There's a lot of companies out there that use systems where essentially when you connect to their system, they snap off a virtual machine with a stored copy of the operating system, like an appliance server. It runs your request and query, and as soon as you're done with it, it gets blown away.
Yeah, and from the perspective of like the IT enterprise, Norton Ghost is your friend. It really is.
Speaking of virtual machines, EC2 you mentioned earlier, would you recommend that for a hosting environment, web?
There is
a
degree.
Uptime.
Yeah, there is a degree to which there is a security concern with EC2, both a what I consider to be an internal external one. On one hand, Amazon has all your shit sitting on its disks, and there are possible ways where it could be subpoenaed without you knowing.
Oh, not for illegal things.
Well, yeah, no, I know, but it's worth mentioning. Like I said, I do fucking threat monitoring.
Right.
Dude.
Okay.
The way
thank
my
you.
Brain works
thank
will
you.
Scare the shit out of you.
Two part question then.
Anyway, but the other one is it is possible and has been done to be inside of a VMware VM and break out of that VM and be able to access other memory. So there are risks associated with that.
Okay. Thank you. And the second question is SSL with respect to Usenet. How secure is that? Or should we really be touching Usenet these days, or are we all right?
SSL, like as your transport mechanism to Usenet? Well, it depends. At that point, the weak point in the security chain is the hosting company that you're getting your you're getting your Usenet services from, and how it fans out from there. But that's kind of a complex question. It really depends.
Next.
And if somebody's breaking 128-bit SSL encryption in real time on your stuff, you've got bigger problems.
Yeah, next.
Answers are less important than
beer. Okay, we're up next.
Okay.
Next. My question's for the lady.
By the way, let's have an amnesty period and give a beer to everybody holding their hand up. Wait.
You didn't
think that one.
Now
through,
we
did
just
you?
Displayed exactly why immigration reform in the U.S. is completely fucked up right now.
Oh my
Like, that is actually really kind of funny when you think about it. But anyway,
next.
You've had your hand up. Wait, for a
no, we have a mic. We have a mic already.
Mic in the back. Go ahead and ask your question and shout.
Go, mic person. Go, go. Ask question.
Go.
Okay, my question again is for the lady.
Oh my God.
You're familiar with gaming.
Wait, hold on. I can't.
Gaming.
If I'm looking for a real something that can just quiz my brain, that I can sink my teeth into games, something that's not just about the look, I want something that's going to give me a major challenge.
Quiet, please.
Where do I go?
Oh, my God. I mean, that's like saying, what kind of art should you buy? I mean, it's such a personal choice.
A major challenge. What is the biggest challenging game that you've seen?
I mean, it depends what you find as a challenge. Do you find combat as a challenge? Do you find puzzles as a challenge? I mean,
all the above.
If you like casual games, like puzzles, no. I would recommend Puzzle Pirates.
Imports.
I mean, if you want the biggest game probably in the world right now, World of Warcraft is extremely addictive, extremely challenging to break your addiction from it, I would say.
There you go.
I mean, my games are at play.net, Gemstone, Dragon Realm, Cyberstrike. Again, it depends if you're liking text games or graphical games.
It's about the challenge, something that's going to really
if you like
my
murder
brain.
Mysteries, we have a game, Modus Operandi. I mean, it's really impossible to say if without knowing more about you and what you find interesting. It's sort of like if you came to me and say, what novel should I read? Like, what kind of novel
should
you
enjoy reading?
I'm open
to any. I just want something that's going to be intense, that's going to give me, I mean, something that'll max my brain.
Okay, well, I mean, what do you guys think? What kind of game should she play?
There's always the game of life of having children.
Yeah.
That's pretty challenging.
Yeah, if you're liking a multiplayer game, if you're liking a console game, are you liking a casual game, a text game? It's really impossible to say. But, I mean, if you just want one of the biggest games in the world right now, to go for World of Warcraft. If you want to wait a while, I'm hearing great things about Age of Conan, that's going to be opening. It depends.
All right.
Hero's Journey, my company. Yeah, we got Hero's Journey coming out. And we have an engine, Hero Engine, that other people are using to make their game, and God knows what they're going to do with it. So, okay. But yeah, have a beer.
Got a long time talking about gaming, so you better.
I got a pretty good question, I hope. I'm on a 2-week hiatus here, and it ends on Tuesday. I work at a university. We have a variety of computers. We have some public computers, and I refer to them as the cesspool.
Define public computer.
It's available to anybody in the building that has a key to that room, specifically graduate and postdoc students. And they tend to be the worst computers in terms of the shape.
Lab computers.
Lab computers. We've done everything from different types of locking down to now where people are being funny and resetting the CMOS and the BIOS and locking us out from that by resetting the password. So we're going to have to lock the cases. Point being is looking at clean slate and deep freeze in terms of some applications. I don't know if you're familiar with these that completely.
Really, you want to know my and this ties into like the answer I was giving the fellow earlier. One of the things that's very important in a university computer, in my opinion, is the ability to make it do what you want. But you need to be able to start from a clean state. What I would actually do is get it set up the way you want it, do the Norton Ghost image thing.
Well, they are
image. And then just set the motherfucker up to be able to reinstall itself every damn day.
Well,
because it really only takes about 10 minutes to do that. So you basically turn it on at the beginning of the day. And
right. Well, their image right now, the problem is they're like kind of open to the postdoctoral students and people who are writing their dissertations so that they can work on them. So that they're open 24 hours and on the weekends. So the professors haven't provided anything to them. So they have to be open. They can't image in the middle of them working on it, basically.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well,
The other question I had was, in terms of locking them down, we considered biometrics and whether or not that was a feasible thing, and if there was such a thing as a
it's getting
like a
bit noisy
keyboard.
In here. Can we cut it down a little, please?
Are you trying to protect them from themselves, or are you trying to protect everybody else from the
malicious
use? All right,
guys, go to the back here. What's the situation?
And the other thing is I'm a big fan of maintenance windows for things like that. So just you can actually use it to police the social policy for the space in some ways. So having every machine will reboot and reinstall at 4 a.m. every day, fucking plan for it. That's actually a good policy, because a lot of the programs that like lock down everything anybody can do on a computer also prevent them from installing certain pieces of software. So that basically puts you in an from an IT perspective in this bad position where you can be limiting what somebody on your campus needs to do. Because if they're using a public machine, it usually either means there's somebody who can't afford a machine of their own, or they had a fucking hardware failure, more times than not. So, like, somebody's laptop is off being serviced, so they've got to use your lab, and if they have some piece of software they need to install, and you have something on it that blocks it, you're really defeating the purpose of having a public lab. So I'd go with a forced maintenance window. Every 4 a.m., everything in the damn lab reinstalls, something like that.
Go.
Okay,
go.
I work in multiple computers, running multiple operating systems, Server 03, Vista, and Solaris. And I was wondering, other than Ghost, is there a decent program that is free that does imaging?
DD.
Okay.
That was almost a chorus.
Yes. DD, DD. DD, DD. Next.
VMs, seriously. The performance impact
is nil. Next, go. Just go. Question. Whoever's got the mic.
What I want to know is how long before we'll be able to sword fight each other in the black sun, you know, virtual reality online?
You know, I think we're going to see augmented reality long time before we see virtual reality, and even Gibson's gone in that direction in terms of, like, his sci-fi writing, like in Spook Country, his latest book. He's even started to swing in that direction with the way he's been writing, and as Stevenson's even been making kind of comments. There's a lot of issues with virtual reality in that you can't immerse yourself for more than 3 hours without being very hard to, like, be immersed. No. It actually there have been a lot of there have been like at least one medical study where like immersing yourself in VR for like more than 4 or 5 hours is actually kind of harmful.
I think the kids downstairs are proving that already.
But augmented reality is what I want. I want my normal fucking glasses to be like, you know, if there's like a major fucking headline or something, like I want it to be, you know, the president was just shot, you know, roll across my fucking glasses if something like that happened.
The best virtual reality simulator is still between your ears. Go talk to the role-playing guys downstairs.
Yeah, hey, just a quick thing about augmented reality, really quickly. There's a company in Israel, Lumis Optical. I'm waiting for the actual release of their product. It fits with regular prescription glasses, just like Val and I wear. It's vertical mirrors that rotate when charged, and it basically superimposes a computer screen, low-res VGA, right over normal prescription glasses.
Well, nice. I'll say that kind of thing, I mean, there have been tests on it that does make you nauseous. Yes.
They have not yet released it. They were supposed to do some commercial release stuff in May. I haven't seen any new press releases.
And the world looks so much better in VGA resolution.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've actually done some testing on this. I mean, there's the difference between the human eye in terms of where you focus on something that's close to you and something that's far away. For example, if you were to look at, like, something that's, like, a few feet away from you, and you can just think about it, and are you going to focus on some, like, you know, think about the head of the person in front of you. You can look at that head, and you can focus on that, and then whatever is further away is going to appear sort of double vision. Or you can suddenly focus on something further on the other side of the room, and that's in focus, and then that head in front of you is suddenly double vision. And it's something very subtle that we do in our brain that makes that change. And computer games really can't tell. You might be playing a computer game, and you want to focus on something that's at that near view, but the game is focusing on something that's far away. And that kind of difference in terms of what your brain is wanting to focus, a very subtle muscular change inside your eyeball, is, you know, the end result.
Sensors
that it makes
about
you nauseous.
What your eyes are doing are going to be very
plus
important.
Plus, most
of
movies and science fiction have a very narrow definition of what is virtual and augmented reality. If you're using Google Maps with a GPS on your cell phone and any of the social networking type applications that are starting to mash up
you're
around
such
that,
a nerd.
you are using augmented reality.
Since it appears that some of the Nortons and the big guys aren't catching rootkits, is there anything in the near future that can at least a short term that can catch rootkits?
get a really big power failure that affects the entire country for roughly 12 hours. Most of them will be gone.
Non-facetiously, the problem is actually not catching the rootkit. The problem is the system architecture that allows a rootkit to exist in the first place. Okay, so, I mean, we could do that now, okay? It just doesn't run any of the operating systems in the software you're used to.
Yeah, it's funny in that
the devil's bargain you make when you buy a personal computer operating system.
The term rootkit, when it started in Unix, was as simple as a bunch of little applications that replace key system applications, like LS, like your file listing, the equivalent of DIR. It would replace that. The first rootkits were stuff that was that basic, replacements of LS, W, and stuff like that. Now, when people are talking about rootkits, they're talking about things that masquerade as device drivers or actually shield themselves within the kernel and stuff like that. And I completely agree with what James just said, that really the system architecture allowing those types of things to exist is the big problem. But it's always going to be a problem. It's just even like what were some of the stuff demonstrated with AMD chips involving VM rootkits, where the rootkit was actually running the regular OS as a VM and containing
don't
itself
get me started
way
about VMware.
Below it.
Hey, quick thing about rootkits, though. Has anybody here heard of TrueCrypt?
Yep.
It's a great program, great encryption. Problem is, in Linux, if you allow your regular users to use it, it runs a setuid root. The problem is you there was a version of TrueCrypt, the previous one released, I think. Somebody found that a regular user could remount a TrueCrypt volume as /sbin. Which is a bad thing.
That's real nice.
So all of a sudden now, if your user creates a TrueCrypt volume, puts in their own code, and then all of a sudden you mount it as the regular user mounts it as /sbin, bingo, they have super user access now to your box, and it's gone.
By the way, I'd love to know what they're smoking over at Sony Corporate, because after having been slapped down for including rootkits on one disk, they're now doing it again, but in the gaming division. It's like...
Well, they just did it on their USB keys are doing it now, too.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Okay.
Next question.
Next.
Hell yeah.
Jump up.
Yep. Okay, so PGP, here's a hypothetical situation. NSA, FBI, whoever's doing a criminal investigation of cyber crimes, can they assume a guilty presence of malicious files or stolen files if your files are encrypted with PGP?
No, not in the U.S.
No, but it will pique their interest. One of the things, cover traffic. Cover traffic is actually a thing. If you use any type of encryption protocol, use it fucking regularly. If you use PGP, email your friends with PGP regularly. Because I know people who have cron scripts set up to just regularly shoot out PGP emails to friends and just say, dump this shit based on blah, so that they have cover traffic. And most of that's just tradecraft. I mean, a lot of times, if you think about this stuff, and you've actually got to just practice good fucking tradecraft if you're gonna want to do clandestine communications at all, because it's really what you're talking about.
It's not
just rattle message; it's clandestine communications.
Rattle.
Next.
I have a question for you. What will you have from the bar?
What?
What will you have from the bar?
Bring me a Guinness.
Okay.
Anything with a sufficiently high alcohol content to make him slur his words.
There was a single malt scotch back there, Glenvale, I think. Get me one of those.
Cool. Next.
Oh boy.
Where's the mic?
Right there.
Yeah.
Go.
Just ask. Somebody with the mic.
So I was gonna ask Alonka, because I know her and I know more about her background, but I'll ask Randall instead. I'm sort of early in my career, and I know that you've had some trouble with the law, and you've done a lot of presentations on that, and as a result, you've been on a lot of panels.
Yeah.
So I tend to lose track of what I'm doing and talk on and on and on and sort of lose track of what's going on, but I'm now in a position where I occasionally have to give presentations. So how can I tell when I'm on a panel that I'm talking over everyone else?
Over? What do you mean by over?
Oh, you just know, and you do it all the time anyway, and you don't really give a shit.
Really? Problem?
when Johnny X comes up to you and it actually hits you with a cattle prod.
I think
wait, he asked it to Randall, though.
Yeah. I think I answered it. I think the answer was in the question.
Yeah, I told you it was a bitter beer.
Only some people could see it, though.
Are you trying to kill me, or do you love me?
I just didn't think you're drinking enough.
Hey, I hate to spoil the mood, but I actually have a practical question. I've got a neighbor with a... Sorry. I have a neighbor with who wants to let me use his wireless DSL, and the people who set it up, I've got the password, I've got the WEP and all that, but it doesn't work, and there's nobody in our little shit town in Western North Carolina who can help us. Is there a utility I can get somewhere that will just break the code?
Were any of us listening?
Can I download it from somewhere? I mean,
are you listening? Uh-oh.
What? Who? Where? There was booze up here.
Can you repeat the question?
I can't hear a discussion going on up here about booze. It didn't work.
Quiet, please.
There we go.
Is there a utility I can download from some website that will break a WEP so that I can get on? Because the fellow with the DSL wants me to be able to use it. I told him I'd pay it for it, but I can't get it to work.
That's a good question. There are, you know, utilities that will do that out there, but break PGP is a distinctly non-trivial prospect. So, you know, how long are you prepared to wait, and or how much money are you prepared to spend on solving the problem? Sorry?
Oh, WAP?
Oh. Okay.
Wait, WAP or WAP? WAP?
WEP.
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 Wireless equivalent.
Hold on, let me get the chainsaw.
I missed the question, guys. I was passing beer down. Is it how to crack WEP? WEP versus
WPA? I got to bounce off and check on the Tesla coil, folks. I'm going to smoke a cigarette. I'll be back within 10 minutes, I guarantee.
In other words, we're never going to get an answer to this question. It just keeps getting distracted up here. I'm so sorry. Something about WEP and
okay,
security.
Very short answer. If you have a Linux system, just go out and Google WEP crack, and you will find the software you need. Okay? If you have difficulty installing it, running it, and are not that familiar with running Linux systems, please feel free to find your nearest college student, high school student, or something, and slip them $20 and ask them to do it for you.
All right.
Next question. We'll try and be
next.
A little bit more attentive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is kind of a serious question.
Okay.
I am creating a couple of my own games right now, and I was thinking about putting up my own website and offering them for download for say $15 or whatever.
Okay.
Number one, what do I have to do to be legal? Do I have to have like a business license, et cetera, et cetera? Number two, what resources, services would you recommend for security as far as, obviously I want to make sure my customers' credit numbers are secure, that sort of thing.
Wait,
unless you really want to run a game hosting company, and I really wish Ilanka was here to answer this question, there are several companies out there that make it their business to host software for download for pay. Like every other line of business, there are the good, the bad, and the ugly in there. Some of them will rip you off. Some of them are actually pretty decent deals. One that I've had personal exposure to that's always been great to deal with has been Digital River, but that said, that's just one personally I've worked with.
Okay, so you would definitely recommend using a service as opposed to...
I would, as I said, unless you really want to run your own... Unless you really want to run your own business in that, because that's what you'd have to do to get the level of security and assurance and, as you said, legality.
There's a lot of things to get right, and the economy of scale really helps there. You really want to just tie into somebody else's service instead of setting it up yourself, unless you're willing to put in a year or two of your time to figure out about... financial security especially is really a critical issue.
Yeah, especially if you ever lose those credit cards... Very bad things will happen to you very quickly.
Yeah, CGX.
Is that absinthe by any chance?
Is this absinthe by any chance?
Next. Thank you.
I kind of wish the lawyer from yesterday was here. I guess, I don't know if she was really a full lawyer or what. Anyway, it's a matter I take a personal interest in. I spent the summer in China, personally experienced the Great Firewall, and I was wondering how... Everyone feels in general about the ethics of breaking the Great Firewall, while that's a destructive hack, it would liberate information. So what are the signs on that, and what's your take?
I wouldn't want it to be traced back to me that I was helping.
Yeah. There's a gentleman who...
I mean, if you look at what the Chinese did to their Food and Drug Administrator recently in terms of failure, it's a very simple system. They don't get repetitive faults.
You know, right, so,
there is no right side of a totalitarian regime.
So this is a question for the...
Seriously, it's got more to do with your politics and what you think about whether it's justifiable breaking the law of a country.
Yeah, would you have thrown tea at the Boston Tea Party? I mean, I might not have, given my history with legal systems.
Would you stand in front of that tank in Tiananmen Square?
Oops, I'm not supposed to mention that, Jenny.
Okay, yeah. Next, who's got it?
All right,
go.
So a question for the reverse engineers on the panel and in the audience. I was wondering, I used to use SoftDice and OlliDebug when I was using Windows, and it's been 2 years in Linux now, and I haven't touched any reverse engineering tools. So what do you use? GDB? What are the alternatives there for Linux and Solaris and 10?
Okay, if you're in the Solaris world, go and get one of the very good books by a gentleman by the name of Jared Jensen on DTrace.
Okay.
DTrace is an absolutely fantastic utility. Unfortunately, at the moment, it only runs under Solaris. Various people keep trying to port it to Linux unsuccessfully. But basically, it lets... Yeah, there is a FreeBSD port in progress. But essentially, it's a great program because it makes it everything on the system act as if it's instrumented. You can see exactly what's going on. You can stop it, start it, you know, pull everything out of it. But it doesn't. You don't incur the overhead for doing that. Several people got their PhDs in how they actually made that happen. So go have a look for that for Solaris. As for Windows, reverse engineering Windows programs is kind of like, what was that cesspool you mentioned?
Yeah. Nothing for Linux then? Nothing in the audience?
Linux, anybody?
They don't use Linux. So.
Yeah, you use Mac OS X. Security?
10. 10. 10.
Okay. Thanks. Next.
Excuse me?
I call it
I've given up trying
calls.
To actually walk the mic so you people can walk to me.
Next.
She's blues. Better looking than you are anyway.
Okay. Slightly more simplistic question, but I have had my hand up for 40 minutes.
Can you still feel your fingers?
What do you personally do to secure your home networks and or computers?
Lock the door.
I don't really care about my home network. I don't have any computer on it when I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to get the longer, geekier answer to that question. I try not to run general purpose computers on my network. Everything that I use that's serious stuff is closer to an appliance. So, for example, all my files, storage, backup, photographs, legally purchased music files are all sitting on a file server. Okay, a small appliance, small NAS appliance. Basically because, rather like Rattle, I get tired of having to hack my own infrastructure together. And if I separate out the functions into multiple smaller devices, it's less of a problem if one of them has a problem. It only affects one function. You know, this sort of idea of one personal computer in the house that does everything is also one giant single point of failure.
Yes. Yes.
That failure could be hardware, software, or user error. Or Microsoft's fault, more likely. So I know that's kind of a wacky answer. Not everybody's up to running their own network of appliances, but it's getting easier all the time. You can walk into your local Fry's Electronics. You do have a local Fry's Electronics, right? You can buy small office class NAS appliances, network attached storage appliances. Which will basically you just plug in their plug and play onto the network, set them up. They're typically running some kind of stripped down Linux version that somebody else has sweated over, making reasonably secure and stable. Blah.
Yep. Good answer. Next.
How would you define the difference between open source software, and free software as defined by the FSF?
I defer to Richard Stallman. He's hairier and smellier than me.
Generally, the FSF people reserve the title of free software for everything that's under the GPL, and they don't really recognize the BSD and other style licenses as being sufficient to their needs. and their politics. So they would, they sort of frown, from what I know about talking to Richard and his crew, they sort of frown on anything that's called open source, because it's not really where they're at. But then you get Eric Raymond and Richard Stallman in a room, and I've seen this
before.
That's
a good fight.
Oh, it's a great fight. We had it happen on a cruise ship. We couldn't get them both off the cruise ship at the same time, so they were still on the cruise ship, and they were arguing back and forth. One was yelling free, the other was yelling open, and Mad Dog was in the middle. Yeah, Mad Dog in the middle was just going crazy. Oh, yeah, really. Cage match, I think, is what we needed to do next, but whatever.
It's a religious schism. It'll never be solved.
It is.
All right. Okay. Basically, we've had world domination for fun, but what about world domination for profit? Can you guys come up with an idea for blackmailing a small rich country or a large corporation so we will have beer fund money for 2008? Oh, and I am leaving, but I've got some homebrew. It's in the back, including world domination ale, yeah. The beverage that evil geniuses prefer. All I need is to go and get the stuff back for the hotel. And, cool. Oh, yes, if my wife comes, tell her I'm going home.
Yeah. Okay.
Good luck. Question
the, thing about, the thing about the evil genius part is the genius part. Most smart people don't resort to blackmail because they know two things. One, if you actually do honor the blackmail agreement when they pay you, you've just given up all your leverage. There's nothing to stop them from coming after you. And two, if you don't honor that, well, then you pretty much got to get rid of them. And if we're talking about blackmailing the entire world, I see a small life support problem here.
How about like a major religion? You know, get some dirt on the Pope or like the Scientology people. They're going around dealing with all the...
They seem to be doing that pretty much themselves, so...
Self-destruct.
Yeah. Nah, that's passé.
Next.
Well, first of all, I liked the beer part of his proposition. The rest, I don't care. The beer part is good. I've heard a lot
Did
about...
Did we proposition you?
No.
Darn.
So sorry.
I like beer propositions, but...
Oh, she likes being propositioned with beer. That's
hey, I have no. The alcohol up here. Where's your camera? I can do this. Buy a
beer. Well, I could be propositioned with beer, but probably nothing would happen on the other person's end. But anyways, my question wow, is...
They have four. Pills for that now.
Uh-oh. But mixed with alcohol? I don't know. It might not work, right?
It works.
It does? Okay, people know. This has been tested and approved, huh?
Walk into the blue light. Yes.
Okay. My question is, I've heard a lot about packet shaping lately, and I was wondering if you thought that this was actually likely to become standard practice for ISPs in the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years.
It pretty much is already. Packet
really?
Shaping is just one class of profiling I spoke about earlier, and pretty much the age of dumb traffic where we just ship the bits everywhere
over.
Is over.
So
I mean, everybody's doing packet inspection.
Nobody's equal anymore.
They never have been.
Never
have been. AT&T can afford a lot more lawyers than I can.
So it's a lot
and
of
equipment,
okay.
And bandwidth. And people in hard hats.
Right? They can't take the beer away.
You can
well,
get a beer.
Until you drink it. I would suggest you get your share now.
Okay.
Bring enough thirsty lawyers in here. And,
My question is more for James, since you deal with secure operating systems. What distro of Linux do you recommend that's more secure directly out of the box, opposed to like CentOS, which is not really that secure directly out of the box?
OpenBSD.
Well, version of Linux.
Oh, well, forget it.
Okay, I'm going to be facetious here. Big surprise. A copy of Gentoo Linux running in a brand Z container under Solaris.
That would work.
There we go.
Yes.
Good luck on nmapping that one.
Okay, so my question
That's
is related...
That's not a hypothetical either.
My question is relating to buffer overflows, which seem to be causing the vast majority of most security flaws, major security flaws.
Yep.
There have been some solutions that have been put in place for this sort of thing, like no execute bits, managed code, things like that. Could you go over like the quick pros and cons of some of these approaches and any other approaches that you think would be good to prevent these?
Okay, this is not a new concept, although it is new to the PC world, and it seems to be complete terra incognita to Microsoft. But The concept's fairly simple. I have a piece of hardware that can tell from one bit flip whether I'm running program code or whether this is data, and does not allow you to run program code in your data space. Okay, this is, doesn't sound like rocket science, but it's surprising. There haven't been many popular read Intel / AMD processors that have supported this up until now. However, that's the half of the equation. The other half is that needs to be supported by the operating system. If you don't have both of those, it's just not going to work. We do have both of those now. In fact, even Microsoft, like much as I like to malign them, had this in XP.
DEP.
Yeah. And the problem is, because it hasn't been there for so long, so much of the code that's there actually uses features of the operating system, system libraries, and so forth that break if you turn it on, that it's a serious problem. Now, you could also look at this as a subclass of virtualization, and pretty much that's inevitable. When you've got 8 cores running multiple threads running on your desktop or on your laptop or in my handheld phone, for instance, oh please, you're going to be able to afford the resources to essentially virtualize almost everything that you do. And that's the direction the operating systems are heading in. And under those conditions, with hardware enforcement of virtualized separation, you literally, there's nothing you can do in software, even if you're the operating system, to break that.
There are also other solutions like stack randomization and linking order randomization, sentinel checking, things like that, that are being put into various operating systems. OpenBSD adopted a number of those a few years ago, and really reduce the chances of being broken into by buffer overflows. Buffer overflows are a thing of the past. Also, Perl has gone through and looked at every place that it could possibly do a buffer overflow, and that's all been zeroed out. So if you write code in Perl, you're safe already.
Okay. Quick note on that also.
Remember the profiling I mentioned earlier? Again, when you've got systems hardware where I've got lots of cores and threads hanging around, most of our code is still not that parallelizable and can't take advantage of that. But there's nothing stopping me from grabbing a core or a thread and saying, okay, you're now the system monitor. Your sole job is to sit there and watch the other programs and make sure that they do not deviate from their flight plan.
Quick thing about buffer overflows. A hobby of mine is reading embedded computing systems for small that kind of wrote a very large scale really quickly. And a growing thing is running hypervisor systems, and even Dell just recently announced a few weeks ago that they're going to start shipping hypervisor either Zen or like VMware ESX or GSX server.
Cool.
As the hypervisor. If you buy these systems, they start at several $1,000s to begin with, you know, just for the hardware with nothing else on it, and that's like no drives or anything. But they're basically going to be running hypervisor systems and running everything as independent, every program is an independent VM compared to everything else.
There's still some ways to sneak layers, and they've proven that, but
it does make it a thousand times harder. More difficult.
Yes. There are, easier to detect, too. Software models, this computer science theory that basically it's mathematically provable that it's unbreakable. Unfortunately, most of the popular operating systems that you're used to, those models do not apply to and they cannot be retrofitted.
Okay,
it's
I think
a design
we just,
issue.
We just proved that we can become a virtual rattler even when he's not here. Sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead. We're operating in his behalf while he's gone.
All right, do you guys see an end to PBXs with the advent of VoIP?
Start over.
Do you see an end to PBXs with VoIP? And if so, how do you maintain quality of service without doing something expensive like MPLS?
Sorry, I missed the first portion
PBXs,
of the question.
End of PBXs because of VoIP. I don't know if that's an either-or thing, is it?
No, I mean, basically what's happening, you know, PBXs and phone companies are like the Borg. Resistance is futile. All will be assimilated. I mean, basically, whether they're, you know, they may not be what we would call a PBX 10 years from now, but they're pretty much going to be occupying the same role in the infrastructure.
Yeah.
I mean, there still have to be phone lines to the cell tower and back to the infrastructure to talk to all the other cell towers in the nation.
I mean, I've been known to annoy telecommunications people by declaiming that voice is just a data type.
Instead of delivering 5 ESS instead of delivering 5 ESS to the customer, they're going to be delivering IP traffic, and it's just going to be the same thing. It's still going to have local systems interpret that and route it.
I've got I can download Skype on my cell phone. Okay, I mean, voice over IP is becoming a very lightweight application.
Yep.
Okay. I'm running the U740 by Samsung, and I was wondering, is there a way to put Windows Mobile 6.0 on it? And if so, if I do, will CDMA and EVDO networks be blocked?
Okay, that's a very specific question.
Can you ask something like if a train leaves Chicago at 4:30 in the afternoon? I think we can do that one better.
The short answer to your question is probably not, okay, because but Windows Mobile is an operating system, has a lot of cryptographic signing in it, has a lot of features that are very dependent on hardware support. And the consent, so to speak, of the hardware manufacturer. It was designed that way. So the answer is probably not. Okay, yeah. If Samsung chooses not to do that.
Okay. Next question.
All right, next. Wait for the cookie. Next, go.
So I have two questions, but I'm only going to ask one.
Okay.
There's something phallic about these.
I have a question about language design.
Language design.
Or I have a question about educating system admins. Which would you prefer?
What? Educating what?
Educating system admins.
Educating system admins or language design.
Language design.
Training system admins. I prefer the sort of pain reward method myself. The more painful, the better.
How about just ask both of them? You're the only guy standing right now. Go ahead.
Okay. So I would like to preface this with the answer cannot be use X, where X is any existing language, because that's just a smart-ass cop-out.
X sucks anyway. I wouldn't use X for anything.
Since it's a free variable, I'm including Perl.
10.
Except for your operating system.
So, which three features would you think... Okay, fine. Each panelist, which one feature do you most want in any given language?
One that makes me write less code to get more done.
Yeah, that's the DWIM instruction, and you're not really answering my question.
No, every language is optimized for the tasks that you're going to be performing, so you really can't answer this with a generic language question. You really have, I mean, there are things I would use Perl for, there are things I'd use Smalltalk for, things I use C for, things I use Assembly for.
Well, you could say something like, well, I want locality. Right? And that's a general quest answer that says, oh, well, this is a general problem with human cognition.
I'm going to go with
comments. Comments. Yeah, that works.
I'm going to go with this one as well. I mean, I normally am a fan of strict bounds checking myself, but for example, there are certain applications where only recursive self modifying code will do.
Alonka?
Your turn.
Just say Perl and move on.
No.
I don't know. I don't have much of a comment on language. I just use whatever is applicable because none of my stuff needs to run in absolute production runtime stuff.
Can I put in a plug here or a favorite complaint? Okay, I'm bitching. Never mind. And that is that the vast majority of comp sci departments these days expose students to only two, maybe three languages at most.
That's wrong.
I get really tired of dealing with system administrators that know Unix is an operating system, i.e. Linux is an operating system, maybe Windows, C, and maybe C++. They've never heard of Fortran. They've never heard of Forth. They've never heard of
Smalltalk.
They've never heard of others. You know, if you're not exposed to them, Java is just C++ with a really good type library.
And a big marketing department.
Yeah, I know, I work for them. So if you're not exposed to different programming approaches that are applicable in different circumstances, you're never able to evaluate which is the appropriate one for the right type.
If you haven't learned a functional language yet, you haven't been a programmer. If you haven't learned a Lisp-like language yet, you haven't been a programmer. If you haven't learned a full object language like Smalltalk, you're not a programmer yet. That's the kind of thing that people need to start doing.
Fourth, the best language for drunk programming in is.
Yeah. Programming!
Good, that's good. Yeah. All right.
Do you still want me to ask the second question or you want me to pass it on?
Go ahead.
Okay. So the first question I should have prefaced, I spent a long time working on language design in the abstract.
Yep.
Right? And that was the background. Second question, I spent the past 2 years doing production support for a very large company with a very large number of computers.
Yeah.
We have an incredible difficulty finding anyone to do the job.
Yes.
Yes.
There are no degrees in it.
Yes.
How would you put... Oh, yes, okay, fine. Good people are hard to find. It's a very immature field, so clearly...
Immature. It's that they're very vulnerable to do well, and they're all
Just finish the...
How would you design an educational program to take some number of people and at the end spit out...
I have a finger.
At least a fourth of them as successful, intelligent, well-educated system administrators.
I learned on the job. I don't know how to do it any other way.
Sounds interesting.
Cheers.
Yeah. Maybe I did comp sci back in the Stone Age, but I really don't think you should be able to graduate with any kind of qualification in computer science unless you've written at least one working program in at least four languages.
Yeah, there we go.
One of which is assembler, because I get really tired of programmers who think hardware resources are infinite.
They aren't? What's hardware?
My Perl programs presume they are.
Who shall I say?
Most of these are going to be questions for Ilanka.
Ilanka, you listening?
Oh, good. I got a quick break.
Ilanka, this is for you. Question. Sorry. Right. In terms of like online games, what are the encryption methods that you use for transferring data between servers and clients?
Oh man.
You gonna plead the fifth for that one?
I mean, I've heard of all kinds of different methods being used. I mean, the general rule of thumb within the game industry is never trust the client. No matter how secure you make the client, we design games with the assumption that the client will be hacked. And so we... So
actually, that's true for most client server software.
Something important about position or speed or quantity of ammo or anything like that, we try and keep all that on the server. And the packets that we send to the client are generally just going to be kinds of things about what kinds of things are you seeing at this point. So, but to my knowledge, I mean, I've seen all kinds of different, I've seen MD5 hashes being used. And I'm not even sure what, I mean, I hire smart people to do the encryption at my company, so I'm not even sure what they're using at this point. But we do run with the general rule of thumb, the client will be hacked. Never trust the client.
Okay, have a beer.
Okay, this is just a comment. In my objects and design course at Georgia Tech, they're using Smalltalk. So
what am I saying to you?
You keep mentioning it.
I'm good about it. I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
John, J-O-H-N.
What?
What else are they using? All programming languages are useful and have something to teach you.
Yes.
In the case of COBOL, even if it's only how to hate.
And how to hate in very, very long, complete sentences.
Okay, my politically incorrect joke for the evening for the programming geeks in the audience is male COBOL programmers know why women hate periods so much.
Joke division, period. Next, who's got the mic? Yeah.
Is the booze working yet?
Ilanka, yes. Real quick question. How many more books you got?
I'm really drunk at the moment. Go ahead.
Yeah.
How can we tell?
Right ahead.
How many more books you got?
Go ahead, ask.
How many more books do you have in your possession?
I have two right here, and I've got another 10 up in the room. I do have one autograph signing that's going to be going on tomorrow at the Walk of Fame. But, God, I mean, if you guys buy them all tonight,
can't she take you upstairs to see her lithographs?
Too bad. Too bad. Okay.
Oh, yeah, you had a question. Sorry.
It's an elevator. I just have to press the right number. Right. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Who shall I sign to? Jane. Jenny.
Next.
What do you all think about the .NET framework?
J-E-N-N-I-E. And that's engineering.
It depends. 1.1, 2.0, or 3.0, because they're all incompatible.
2.0. I like 2.0. But what do you think about the .NET framework in Mono also?
It's proof that there is no good idea that Microsoft cannot implement badly.
The only bad thing I could say about Mono is actually somebody uses...
CLR, crappy language runtime?
Well, no, one of my vendors actually implemented a secured mail server type thing running a .NET or actually a C# webmail application on top of Mono on a outdated Linux application and tried to sell it.
Did it work?
.NET, Microsoft Library Envy.
It works. There's a puzzle. It has OpenSSL 097A, which is...
If you look at page 16, there's a hint.
Okay. No, they give it away for free with some of their other products now.
Bailey's.
Okay, I think we're on the next.
Unfortunately, we all do.
Thank you for the scotch.
Or it uses you. Take your pick.
The stuff. Jack Scott Brandy.
Good job.
That was really good. And he didn't drink it. You don't drink?
Okay.
Okay, so so the first thing that I have is a comment that I can...
To the Knights Templar.
To the Knights Templar.
Templar once again.
So the first thing that I have is a comment that I can actually make now that Ilanka's back, because it's for her and I think one other person in the audience. With about five people playing at any given time, I don't think you can count Modus Operandi as being massively multiplayer.
Oh!
Ooh. You haven't seen the people playing it.
That game's been running consistently for over 10 years. Even if it's a small player base, they count. Okay, and we're gonna keep that game open for as long as people want to play it.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Right. So my actual question is actually sort of related to the last one. What do you guys think about C Sharp?
About C Sharp.
We use C Sharp. Bad implementation of an okay idea.
Again.
No, it's just not Java. C++, I mean, it wanted to be Java, and it's just not. They just couldn't own Java.
Microsoft has Java Envy, in case you haven't figured that out.
When are we going to see C flat?
C flat.
I think you're seeing it already.
Well, actually, you need for a magic keyword, if anybody gets this, you actually need B flat.
B flat, yeah.
B flat and amazing, amazing windows will start coming off on your screen, even though it's a dumb terminal.
Yeah, okay,
what
cool.
What was the name for Microsoft's answer to Flash? I can't remember the name.
Sizzle?
If you don't mind me.
No.
Okay. Oh, Silverlight, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yet another bad idea. Okay.
Who names projects over there anyway?
Next, thank you.
This question is for Randall and Dean.
Oh, you and me? We're on.
Guys, what'd you do to Rattler and X to get them to leave at the same time and stay gone the same amount of time?
Isn't that great? Yeah, who knows what's going on back there?
Two words. Tesla coils.
Ah.
Tesla coils cost.
I got them over there.
It's over there.
It's right here. The line is going that way.
All right.
Yes, but you can take the alcohol from here to the Tesla coils. Alcoholic state of mind and high voltage. Ooh.
Those will mix well. You won't feel the shocks until tomorrow.
All right. This question's more for Randall.
Uh-oh, Rob. Stand down, Rob.
Given all the .NET discussions.
Rob, do you want any more contracts? He works for me occasionally. Anyway, go ahead, Rob.
Given all the .NET discussion,
yeah,
and given what Pugs is Parrot is supposed to be. Sorry, I'm way too drunk.
Yes.
Given what Parrot is supposed to be,
yes.
Will Parrot replace .NET?
Unfortunately, not.
Why not?
Because we're not Microsoft. It should be a better question, and should might actually be a useful question.
Okay.
I'd say should, yeah. What Parrot is attempting to do is what the CLR was trying to do, and it would be really nice if
it did.
If it did, yeah.
By the way, with regards to Microsoft, there's an old saying, never ascribe to malice that which can be adequately explained by stupidity.
Yes.
Yes.
Just not in charge.
This question, yes, but you're forgetting to take into account the effect that when you get people together in a group, the collective IQ drops as a sort of an exponential function of the number of people who are part of the group.
The fleet moves only as fast as the slowest ship.
And you've seen Steve Ballmer on stage, haven't you?
Yeah.
This question. Hot chair throwing action.
All right.
Yes.
Next. Okay.
Mr. Dean, you were going on a tear about a bunch of languages that you would like to see people graduate out of computer science departments.
Okay.
I was hoping you could review that list, and then I got a follow up question
list.
On that.
At least just four different languages.
I really
of course.
Can't hear you too well.
What
I've got a lunker in my left ear.
Yeah. Okay. So you're on a tear about languages that you would like to see computer science graduates actually learn.
Okay.
I was wondering if you could review that list first, and then I have a follow up after that.
To be honest, I really don't care. Just as long as it's a pretty long list. Seriously, I mean, one object programming language is enough to learn the principles of object-oriented programming.
But sure, a real object language, like Smalltalk what's the other?
Yeah, C++ is a mutant hybrid.
No, I agree.
So, you know, likewise, you'll learn a lot about expert systems by learning Prolog. You'll learn a lot about interactive and interpreted engines by writing BASIC. Even today, you'll learn a lot about write once, debug everywhere, learning Java. You know, it's more along the lines of put all the languages out there and be able to contrast their strengths, their weaknesses, what they're good for, and why.
What you actually
need. That's the science part. If you're not doing that, then you're basically just doing certification in a programming language.
No, yeah. Okay, now I think you mentioned a fourth at one point, and I'd heard of it, but I don't know anything about it. I was hoping you'd give me an elevator pitch.
There's a Wikipedia article on it.
Fourth is one of my favorite ancient languages, and it's a favorite of machine-level programmers.
It's a wonderful language.
It's basically, do you know what RPN is? Reverse Polish notation on your HP calculator? Fourth is an RPN programming language.
Oh, okay.
So you say 2, 3 plus print, and it prints the stack. Yeah, okay. It's very
Yoda
nice.
An RPN master is.
The cool thing about Forth is that it can compile a huge amount of code and instructions into very small areas. And so it was really good as a microcode controller. It was originally created to control telescopes. Because it was just runs in such a very small space, and it's
because you're
Postgres is a bit like Forth. If you played Postscript is a bit like Forth. So if you play with Postscript, it's very close.
Postscript was Forth at one time, wasn't it?
No,
thank you. Thank you very much.
Some things it doesn't do. It doesn't do the build small stuff.
Oh, that's right.
All right, next. It's getting really noisy up here in the front. I can't hear anything up here. So wait till you put the mic right next to your mouth.
Quick audience poll. Who gets cattle prodded first?
Johnny!
Johnny!
All right.
You better make someone to see.
What?
I did so many. Hang on a minute.
Can you just keep it down just a little bit, Johnny? We can't hear. Just can't hear. Okay, go.
So here we go.
Yeah.
Functional, declarative.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Procedural, object.
Yes, those
languages,
are four.
Right?
That's what I was trying to get to. Thank you.
All right, so.
I'm too drunk to remember those.
You know F sharp. You've heard of F sharp. You know the Haskell guys work for Microsoft in Britain, right?
Good. Yeah, cool.
Okay, so the Haskell, they try to interface with the guys in the F sharp, Anders Hausberg, right, who wrote Turbo, Pascal, right, and all these things.
Microsoft Research. They really are some smart people. Unfortunately, they're crippled by the rest of the company.
Yeah.
Well, these things, you know, as we see, though, I guess C-sharp 3.0 spec and things like this, it's going to be the only language that incorporates functional, procedural, object, and declarative features.
And it will never be used.
The only problem is it's not dynamic. All right. So then you have the CLR as a non-dynamic, non-framework, right? They say Silverlight, okay, WPFE, Silverlight, okay, that has a DLR, right?
Yeah.
So how about a virtual machine that runs in the browser, a virtual machine, the one that compiles the MSIL, runs in the browser, the DLR, as it is, Silverlight, direct access to hardware, okay, and it runs just about every language, C-sharp, F-sharp, Ruby, Python, Perl, all these things.
Or Parrot. Parrot in the browser would work, too.
So let's get into the hacking of it.
You've heard of this little language called Java, right?
And Java.
Parrot in the browser would be
so here's the question.
Okay.
You have a machine like that, VM,
Johnny,
composed in the browser.
Right. I wasn't being facetious when I mentioned Java. There are an interesting bunch of, if you like, preprocessors out there that you can run that essentially will translate one programming language into the Java equivalent, and then we'll run it on top of a JVM. There are also JVMs out there that are not just doing just-in-time compiling. They're starting to do pre-compilation of Java. So, you know,
right, but imagine a world.
Concepts.
But imagine a world where Silverlight, right, this DLR, virtual machine is running in browsers.
That'd be nice.
Right, as clients. Very nice.
Or let's give everybody small talk
perhaps
1980.
Perhaps hackable? Think about it. Perhaps hackable? I mean, what kind of security is there for a virtual machine that's plopped onto a browser and running on somebody's machine? They say, hey, I can debug this thing, right?
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Thanks.
And I really did wish Johnny X hadn't deleted some of his porn collection, but we're not going to have that happen back again either.
Yep.
What did I do?
This question is actually directed specifically to Alanka.
Well, she's in the middle of a noise zone over there.
Guess what? I can't hear. I'm really drunk. What?
I'll be really loud, Johnny's and it's a really easy question. Regarding the fourth section of Kryptos and your presentation yesterday about thinking outside the box.
That was Friday.
Okay, yes.
Okay.
Has serious consideration been given to the idea of simply kidnapping James Sanborn and applying sodium pentothal on a rubber hose to extract the key?
Yeah, it's called rubber hose cryptography. And whenever there's a code, there's a race on whether the spies can steal the answer before someone else can beat it out of the person that came up with the code. And yes, there's been thought to it, but he's quick. So.
Plus the fact there are one or two people who would miss him, unfortunately.
Have a beer.
Since Rattle has left the building for the moment.
Right.
Best case scenario, next 5 years, what percentage of users do you think will be using Linux or a variety of Linux?
A lot more than now.
Repeat the question.
Linux
Best
penetration.
Best case scenario, next 5 years, Linux penetration.
If they keep improving Ubuntu and making things more Ubuntu-ish, I have a feeling within 5 years my mom could probably run it, and if she has problems, I'd be able to help her out remotely.
I'm guessing 50-50.
I think you're going to find a lot more people using open source software that don't actually know they're doing it.
Yeah.
As the services start to disappear into the infrastructure and the user no longer cares about it.
You okay?
I'd also ask you to define your terms. Linux is a kernel. Okay. I know I'm starting to sound a little bit like Stallman here, but
if you go down that row, I'm going to have to hit you.
But you smell better than he does.
I think I made that comment already.
Linux is the entire operating system. So says Linus, and he's a friend of mine. Don't offend me.
Fine, whatever. The point is, it's also, there's multiple distributions. What do you mean by Linux and so forth? The point is, there is an open source ecosystem out there. It's vibrant, it's healthy, particularly when we're talking about operating system functions, code, how you run applications, how you distribute them, how you deal with storage, all those sort of things. So you're going to start seeing a lot more of that start to disappear into things like the Google Cloud, and the average user won't know or care.
The great part is that the CFOs have finally become convinced that open source is actually a viable platform financially. It's the CTOs now that are having trouble saying, do we buy Linux, do we support in-house or out-house, which distribution
mostly
do we get,
out-house.
Do we put put BSD versus Linux, do we do Postgres versus MySQL? These are the questions that people are facing now.
Or do we pay someone like IBM Global Services, gobs of money and do it all for us.
And this is great because what it means is that open source has won. We don't have to establish open source as an alternative anymore. We have won that argument. Richard Stallman was necessary, but is now passed. Eric Raymond was necessary, but is now passed. It's now time to go to the next generation of open source, selling it into the community, selling it into industry. And it involves the choices of the best solutions, no longer giving the choice as just trying to get it as one of the solutions.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it probably could have happened a lot sooner, but you go to war with the revolutionaries you've got, not the revolutionaries you wish you had.
Yeah, yeah.
So who the revolutionaries want?
Someone a little more marketing savvy would have been nice.
I'm trying to be a bit of that. Thank you.
Tech is overrated.
Oh, wait.
Listen to the Floss Weekly podcast. We're interviewing the innovators in open source.
I need
right
to
now.
Jump in for just a second and announce that it's a little after midnight, and this means traditionally we break for about half an hour and we order a hell of a lot of pizzas. So,
questions first, then break?
Huh?
Can I ask get these three people then, right?
Yeah, let's get these three people, then we're going to take up a collection for the pizza fund, and if you kick in for the pizza fund, you get to decide what kind of toppings you want as well.
Okay, I'm mostly drunk and kind of want another beer, but I do have a question.
Won't we all?
That's a good start.
Your ideal comp sci department, what do you want out of it? Do you want an applied math degree, or do you want a glorified sysadmin? What do you guys think the
I want
end
somebody who can live, breathe, and die programming just because they feel like doing it. I actually don't want people getting into programming because they think they're going to make money at it.
I want people that would do it anyway.
I'd like a lot more teaching of the fundamentals, not in the sense that I expect them to be system administrators or assembly-level programmers, but I kind of view the fact that you can't be a programmer in a high-level language without at least knowing how the hardware works and how assembly language works. In much the same way as I don't think you can be a mechanic without knowing suck, squeeze, bang, blow of the four-cycle engine.
Me personally, I don't particularly care because I'm getting out of the IT industry and going back to school. For
something animal related to nanotech or genetic engineering with human applications.
I said animal husbandry. I told you.
Something not IT, basically. Something that uses computers, but
he's gonna watch cows.
The computers
fuck.
Are just a tool. I'm tired of being the tool man who maintains the tool. I want to do something creative with them.
Or sheep or something.
Yes, I am. Sheep. Yes, I. Sheep I fuck. Feel like I am being tooled, and no one has asked my permission, and they have not used lube, and that I'm getting out of the industry. Say again.
What's your opinion on using
well, okay, the problem software. Is if you destroy the world and everyone in it, you can't lord it over them. So
yes,
you're all safe. I am a benign dictator as long as you don't piss me off and I'm not having a bad day.
Praise Bob.
Quick question. Everybody in the room is
don't shit where you live.
Anybody here in the room work in academia most of the time? Okay, or used to. Okay, my point is the difference between being a technician and being a computer scientist is being able to take things back to first principles.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very important.
And I see a lot of computer science that is not able to do that these days.
I would like to thank our lovely and talented bartender up here who made whatever this peanut-flavored liqueur is because it's absolutely wonderful.
It's Mexican.
And she's not going to give us the recipe. We just have to keep bringing her back each year. I hope you got some of this.
Okay, shut up. I've got a question.
Fantastic.
Two more questions. I'm sorry. We're done for now.
What's your opinion on using Spinneret as a data recovery software? And is there any open source software you'd recommend instead?
Never used it. I just make lots of backups.
What was the software package?
Spinneret 6.0.
Spinneret, that's Windows.
No, that's actually
DOS.
It's actually below DOS. Yeah. It's a straight assembly. Look,
runs on
Gibson
Windows.
Writes really nice, tight assembly code and then proceeds to market the hell out of it for the next 10 years. So you could argue of the applicability of something like that these days. If you still have a system for which that type of approach is applicable, yeah, it's a nice piece of package.
Any hard drive, any operating system.
I'd query that because not any hard drive, okay?
Okay, most standard size hard drives.
Spinneret has problems with SATA drives and SCSI drives because they didn't really exist in Gibson's world when he wrote the damn thing.
Okay.
There's a lot of things that
do you
want to
know what the Google
world.
Solution is for making sure they don't lose data?
A software program that can recover data in a bad sector.
Not that. They just make sure they have it backed up or replicated in three physically different locations, and they figure the odds of all three of these places experiencing hard drive failures for that particular piece of data at the same time are minuscule.
Okay.
All right.
Last question.
Things like that are starting to become obviated. If you go to, under Solaris, there's something called ZFS, and it's a FreeBSD port. But basically,
ZFS rocks.
It treats the file system and the data blocks more like a database than it does a traditional file system. It's a system administrator's wet dream for storage management.
Yeah,
it'll
be in the next release of OS X.
Just to show that I'm still a computer geek at heart, I gotta say ZFS makes my penis hard.
Yes. I can testify that it makes his penis hard.
You said you would never tell me, you fucking bastard. You little bitch.
I'm sitting between these two. Help.
It's not enough distance.
Next.
Okay, this is one for people who have been on the SE2600 mailing list for, many years now. Teach me the other hack.
Beer,
no,
man.
Get a beer.
Get a beer.
Yeah.
All right.
And we're just taking a short break.
Before
while
everyone. Break for now. I've really, since I've got a whole lot of. What?